be must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. Purport. Human life is distinguished from the animal life due to its heavy responsibilities. Those who are cognizant of these responsibilities and who work in that spirit are called suras, godly persons. So who's a godly person? What distinguishes a sura from a asura?
Asura turns his back to God, and asura is facing him.
True. Those who are cognizant of these responsibilities and who work in that spirit are called suras, godly persons. And those who are neglectful of their responsibilities and have no information of them are called asuras, demons. Throughout the universe, there are only these two types of human beings. In the Rig Veda, it is stated that the suras always aim at the lotus feet of the Lord Vishnu and act accordingly. Their ways are as illuminated as the path of the sun. Intelligent human beings must always remember that the soul obtains a human form after an evolution of many millions of years in the cycle of transmigration. The material world is sometimes compared to an ocean, and the human body is compared to a solid boat, designated especially to cross this ocean. The Vedic scriptures and the acharyas or saintly teachers are compared to expert boatmen. And the facilities of the human body are compared to favorable breezes that help the boat ply smoothly to its desired destination. If, with all these facilities, a human being does not fully utilize his life for self-realization, he must be considered Atmaha, or killer of the soul. Isha Upanishad warns in clear terms that the killer of the soul is designated to enter into the darkest region of ignorance to suffer perpetually. These are pretty heavy statements. Not too palatable either.
Perpetually, that's eternal?
A long time. But it's interesting because, you know, we see that there are many, many different types of life forms exhibiting some sort of consciousness. Even trees exhibit, you know, you can hook up an electrical device and it will register some sort of reaction according to the thought waves that humans are producing around it. And of course, you know, they've done tests with plants where, you know, if you play rock music, they'll die, and if you play Mozart or something, they thrive, and they're sensitive to vibrations. And creepers, you know, even plants appear to be fighting with each other sometimes. You know, they're having turf wars, and creepers will overcome other plants, and they exhibit movement and consciousness. But the human life is very distinguished from the plants and the animals. And in human life, there's consciousness of self, self-awareness. That really distinguishes the animal from the human. The human is actually aware of its, to a certain degree, aware of itself and, you know, what he or she is doing. And animals don't have that awareness. And there's millions of different forms of living entities, but the human species is really small compared to everything else. All the cockroaches, all the rats, all the different types of plants, birds. It's a rare. I don't know. So if one, the human body is all set up for liberation. I think in the first verse, or it was the invocation, there's a nice description of everything that is perfect and complete. The supreme whole, the source, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And everything that emanates from him is also perfect and complete. And then Prabhupada says here in the purport that the human, says on page 15, he says, the human form is the complete manifestation of the soul. In other words, the consciousness of the soul is completely manifest in the human form. It completely shines through. Where in the other forms, even though the same soul is there, because of the limitations of the body that the soul is inhabiting, it cannot manifest its complete full consciousness. Of course, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita when he's talking about knowledge in the modes of nature. He talks about knowledge in the mode of ignorance, knowledge in the mode of passion, and knowledge in the mode of goodness or awareness. He says that those who have knowledge in the mode of goodness, when they see life forms, they see one soul. They see the same soul there. But people whose knowledge is covered by the mode of passion, they see, if they see a dog, they see a dog soul. You know, if they see a plant, they see a plant soul, or no soul maybe. If they see a cow, they see a cow soul. Or if they see a human, then they see a human soul. But this is actually, you know, this is not complete full knowledge or awareness. There's actually just one soul, the same kind of soul. There's no difference. But it's the body that's different. And of course, Krishna says knowledge in the mode of ignorance is one's not even paying attention to any soul at all. One's just working very hard, just trying to survive and thinking that if you're able to put, you know, a meal on the table, then your life is complete. And nothing, no higher awareness of any higher purpose than that. That's very Japanese. Anyway, on page 15, I love this description. Prabhupada says, all facilities are given to the small complete units, namely the living beings, to enable them to realize the complete whole. All forms of incompleteness are experienced due to incomplete knowledge of the complete whole. The human form of life is a complete manifestation of the consciousness of the living being, and it is obtained after evolving through 8,400,000 species of life in the cycle of birth and death. Well, that's according to the Vedic, you know, information that we got, that there's 8,400,000 species of life, and the soul evolves through these till he gets a human form, and it's only in the human form that one can experience the full consciousness of the soul and graduate out of the cycle of birth and death.
Is that a correct understanding?
Yeah, the Gita, in the 14th chapter, where Krishna is, he's talking about when you die in a particular mode, what happens. So he says those who die in the mode of ignorance, they might go down into an animal form. And those who die in the mode of passion, you know, they're human bodies, and they have strong attachments to the human platform of life. They usually come back as human beings. And those who are very pious and have cultivated the mode of goodness, they can go to the heavenly planets. Then he also talks about different types of liberations. Those who are of a impersonal realization, they might enter into Brahman. Those who have developed love for Godhead, they go back to Godhead. So it's true.
Arjuna's primary concerns about pursuing that path is, if I fail, what happens to me?
That's right. If I make all this endeavor and I don't succeed, I mean, it doesn't sound like I will, because it's very difficult. So he has this doubt. Thank you. So, continuing on here with the purport. There are swine, this is at the bottom of page 30. There are swine, dogs, camels, asses, etc., whose economic necessities are just as important to them as are ours. Ours are to us. But the economic problems of these animals are solved only under nasty and unpleasant conditions. The human being is given all facilities for a comfortable life by the laws of nature, because the human form of life is more important and valuable than animal life. Why is man given a better life than that of the swines and the animals? Why is highly placed government servant given better facilities than those of an ordinary clerk? The answer is that a highly placed officer has to discharge duties of a higher nature. Similarly, the duties human beings have to perform are higher than those of animals, who are always engaged in simply feeding their hungry stomachs. Yet the modern soul-killing civilization has only increased the problems of a hungry stomach. When we approach a polished animal in the form of a modern civilized man and ask him to take interest in self-realization, he will say that he simply wants to work to satisfy his stomach, and that there is no need of self-realization for a hungry man. The laws of nature are so cruel, however, that despite his denunciation of the need for self-realization and his eagerness to work hard to fill his stomach, he is always threatened by unemployment. Of course, it's a fact, you know, that to be able to pursue, you know, self-realization is almost a luxury. Even to be a vegetarian is almost a luxury. There are some places where there's just nothing else to eat. You know, if you're at the North Pole or even in Tibet, something like that, it's food resources are very sparse. And if a human, you know, we have human beings, we have human needs. You know, who was it, Maslow, famous psychologist in the 19th century, he had the theory of the human being and its hierarchy of needs. And these are very true. It's kind of similar to Varnashram, or you could say the level of existence before Varnashram, that the first need of a human being, this is also very true in child development, is that the human being needs, what do you need first of all? What can't you live without? Yeah. Food. How about before food?
Air.
Yeah, air. Air, then water. Air you can go without for 6 minutes. Then your brain starts to die. Water you can go without for about 3 days. Food you could actually go without for about 3 weeks. And so if you don't have any food, you'll do anything to get it, even venturing into dangerous situations when it's a matter of survival. So you're not going to sit around in most cases and read Bhagavad Gita. Or maybe if you've already started reading Bhagavad Gita, maybe you'll just read Bhagavad Gita until you run out of energy and then leave your body. But if you've never heard of Bhagavad Gita and you've never been trained in self-realization and you're starving and someone comes up to you and says, here, why don't you take a Bhagavad Gita? They'll say, why don't you give me some food?
Talk about nourishment.
Yeah, nourishment. So we have to meet this lower need first, really. And then after that, the next need after that is shelter and safety. And children need these things too. If they don't have food, they don't develop well. And if they don't have safety or shelter or a peaceful environment at home, they don't develop well. They'll have traumatic problems from birth, and those problems will affect them their whole life. And for those type of people, even self-realization is very difficult. Even if a person takes up the chanting of Hare Krishna, they may be so unpeaceful or so mentally disturbed that they can barely take the self-realization. So these basic needs are very, very important for the human being. And then after that, if you have your food and if you have your shelter, then a person begins to wonder about what their purpose is and what their talents are. And you have a need to be able to realize your potential. You know, so you can get an education and begin to discover what your gifts are. And then we have a need to actually utilize our gifts for the Lord, ultimately. And then the next stage after that is called self-actualization, where you can actually realize where you are in the moment. And then that's the footstep into self-realization. So if you don't have these lower needs, and you can only go from one need if you've satisfied the lower need. You can't skip needs. You know, if you don't have food, you can't worry about shelter. And if you don't have shelter, you can't worry about your potential. And if you haven't discovered your potential, and you're not peaceful enough, you can barely take up self-realization. It's very difficult. So it's very hard. You have to satisfy these lower needs in order to actually be able to take up self-realization. So, you know, Prabhupada's pointing out here that, you know, if you go up to a hungry man and you try and talk to them about self-realization, they won't appreciate it. So, and Prabhupada, in this purport, he's lamenting, you know, that this is a soul-killing civilization, and it is very unfortunate. And so, part of preaching is helping people satisfy their lower needs so that they can take advantage of self-realization. So as a congregation, you know, as devotees helping each other in spiritual life, you know, it's important to us, you know, that we have Krishna-conscious families where the children are protected and treated properly, and where devotees, you know, help each other with the problems of the lower levels of existence so that everyone can take up spiritual activities completely, fully, without being dragged down again. Continuing on here. We are given this human form of life not to work hard like asses, swine, and dogs, but to attain the highest perfection of life. We do not care for self-realization. If we do not care for self-realization, the laws of nature force us to work very hard, even though we may not want to do so. Human beings in this age have been forced to work hard like asses and bullocks that pull carts. Some of the regions where the asuras are sent to work are revealed in this verse of Sri Yuksha Upanishads. If a man fails to discharge his duties as a human being, he is forced to transmigrate to the asura planets and take birth in degraded species of life to work hard in ignorance and darkness. So this really isn't so far-fetched that there may be planets, you know, in the universe where the conditions aren't as favorable for self-realization as they are maybe on this planet. And the reason I say this isn't so far-fetched is because if we just look at this planet, just like I just recently came back from Japan, and I like to call Japan as the place of advanced Kali Yuga because it's very, very technologically advanced there. And people are working at a very fast pace for very long hours. You know, it's very common for, you know, a person, especially a salary man, to leave the house at 6 o'clock in the morning and travel 2 hours on a crowded train, get to the office, and then the work hour is from 8 to 5 with a half an hour for lunch, but no one leaves the office until the boss leaves. And the boss doesn't usually leave the office until around 8:30 at night. And then the boss usually says, for the purpose of unity and camaraderie, we should all go out for a drink, you know. And you have to go out and drink with the boss till 9, 10:30 at night. And it's very common for the salary man to actually get home at 11 o'clock at night. So they get home at 11 o'clock at night, take a hot bath, eat a quick little meal, go to bed, get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and do that 6 days a week. This is very...
Huh? They have
one day a weekend. And even on that one day, sometimes they're required to come into work for half a day. Yeah. And so where is their time for anything else? You know. Sit down and chant 16 rounds every day. it's almost impossible. And it just goes on like that, and everyone does it. And there's no 2 week vacations or like a month in Australia. Everyone gets maybe 3 or 4 days in the springtime. That's because there's a string of national holidays all together, and everyone takes off at that time. So even when you take your vacation, everyone's taking it at the same time. All the roads are clogged, the trains are jam-packed. And this is human life, advanced Kali Yuga. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 41 and 43, it is stated that a man who enters upon the path of self-realization but does not complete the process, despite having sincerely tried to realize his relationship with God, is given a chance to appear in a family of Suci, or Srimat. This is like you're referring to, Patrick. The word Suci indicates a spiritually advanced Brahmin, and Srimat indicates a Vaishya, or a member of the mercantile community. So the person who fails to achieve self-realization is given a better chance in his next life due to his sincere efforts in this life. If a fallen human candidate is given a chance to take birth in a respectable or noble family, one can hardly imagine the status of one who has achieved success. By simply attempting to realize God, one is guaranteed birth in a wealthy or aristocratic family. But those who do not even make an attempt, who want to be covered by illusion, who are too materialistic and too attached to material enjoyment, must enter into the darkest region of hell, as confirmed throughout the Vedic literature. Such materialistic asuras sometimes make a show of religion, but their ultimate aim is material prosperity. The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, verses 17 and 18, rebukes such men by calling them atmasambhavita, meaning that they are considered great only on the strength of deception and are empowered by the votes of the ignorant and by their own material wealth. Such asuras, devoid of self-realization and knowledge of Isharvasha, the Lord's universal proprietorship, are certain to enter into the darkest regions. The conclusion is that, as human beings, we are meant not simply for solving economic problems on a tottering platform, but for solving all the problems of material life into which we have been placed by the laws of nature. So, it sounds very tough, and it is. It's just how it is. If we look around this world, there's a lot of suffering going on, even in this, you know, Bay Area. A lot of this suffering is not so obvious, you know, especially if you're living in suburbia and everything's neat and clean and relatively safe. But if you visit any downtown area, you'll see that even within You know, even within one city, there are heavenly conditions that are very conducive, you know, for self-realization. And there are very hellish conditions where people are suffering greatly and are overwhelmed by their suffering to the point that it's, you know, to take up spiritual contemplation is practically impossible. You know, when your body is very diseased or you're surrounded in an environment that's very dangerous. You know, there's so many elderly people living in a home, very poor. You know, they don't even have enough money to buy food. They're getting meals on wheels. And they're living in some little stinky apartment surrounded by a lot of dangerous people. They're afraid to even leave their house and go out. And it's a fact, when they go out, especially if you're a little old lady, you're liable to get mugged in a very violent way and your purse stolen. And these things are going on. But we don't see them, we don't think about them so much. But if you happen to live in a situation like this, nothing is by chance. Everything's cause and effect. And so there's a trail, you know, you can trace back for every effect. There's some cause somewhere. And so people are suffering the reactions of their past activities, and it makes it very difficult to progress in spiritual life. Hare Krishna. So any comments before we have a kirtan and then continue on with Bhagavad Gita? We were just reading Ishopanishad. It was verse 3.
Well, if you don't mind, just commenting on what you were just saying last, if you don't mind. Recently I've been doing some work in Las Gatos, and people know Las Gatos is amazingly...
Can you have that microphone over there? Thanks.
It's an amazingly wealthy community, so I've been working on these steps and different projects, and how I got called into it was you know, it's a story in itself, but basically the most popular couple on the entire block 2 weeks ago, the man was upstairs cleaning his rifle and he shot himself in the chest.
Oops.
And last night I was at their house, and you look in their house, and the house is just full of these beautiful pictures of them. He looks like Indiana Jones, and these different pictures on safaris in Africa, and with his hat. Mm. And so she's been going to these. So she's been going to these meteors.
So he died.
Yeah, guides.
He died.
Right? He died. Oh, yeah. Okay. And the whole block is talking about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so last night when I was over there, they were discussing how she's talking to some mediums that are speaking to his ghost. Uh-huh. And the one thing that the ghost is saying is that I'm sorry and I should have known better. That's it. So you know what I've witnessed was you know, here's all the, you know, every other car is a Mercedes, a BMW, a Lexus on this street. Here's this prize couple lives here. Everybody looked up to them, and still then, you know, he's cleaning his gun and it shoots him in the chest. Mm. And then she's getting investigated by the police. They're asking her if she might have done it.
Yeah.
Then they're trying to question if it's suicide, and they say one of the first comments that come out of her mouth was, "Who's going to take care of me in the house, the kids?"
Oh, he wasn't very old, huh?
They were in their 40s.
Wow. Yeah, these things are going on.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about Japan?
More about Japan?
An hour later.
You mean how hellish it is? The devotees and how they're doing?
Yeah, it's a little trip there. Maybe later at the end.
Okay. It was a wonderful trip. Each time has been better and better, really. I'll tell you a little bit at the end. Yeah.
And how hellish it is. Like, that.
How hellish?
And how hellish it is.
Japan is a funny place because even though, you know, people work so hard, it's very heavenly in a lot of ways. It's one of the most safest, peaceful places you'll ever be. And after you're there for a while, you start to really think you're in heaven, you know, especially when it's cherry blossom season and It's so everything is beautiful, it's clean, everything's on time. You know, you go in even to a gas station and people run out to, you know, take care of you, and great service attitude. So it's heavy Maya there, actually. Let's chant Hare Krishna a little bit.